Good morning and Merry Christmas Eve. Can I say that? Can I say Merry Christmas Eve? I just want to be accurate because it's not quite Christmas yet, but great to be with you guys this morning. My name is Pastor Brian. If you guys are new here, thanks for coming. Pumped that you guys are here. I know there's some out-of-town people that are in visiting family and probably some folks just from around Akron that are here just for the first time. So glad that you guys are here with us. We're going to take offering now. Just want to let you know that offering, guys, go ahead and come on down. Offering is something that we do here, and that's something that the people that call this place home do. So if you're a guest, this is not for you. Unless you're just feeling compelled to give, you're welcome to, but we don't expect anything. So, guys, thanks for serving us this morning. I just wanted to let you guys know, just one announcement really this morning, is that tonight at 5 and 6:30, I think you guys know this, at 5 and 6:30 tonight, we're going to gather back in this room and celebrate in a little bit bigger and bolder fashion. So you guys are invited to come back. This is kind of our subtle contemplative devotional kind of Christmas service, but tonight it's going to get a little bit bigger and a little bit crazier. So love to have you guys come back, bring family, and celebrate tonight with us. Okay, so we're going to kind of finish out our Christmas series. This is fitting on Christmas Eve, and we're going to be in a couple different places this morning, and I'll direct you to where we're going to be, but I want to open up with something that happened 2 to 3 years ago. The older I get, the less precise I get in my history, but it was very recent. My family and I, we went down to Nashville to celebrate Christmas with my wife's family. Particularly my wife's brother and sister live down there, and their families are congregated in the Nashville area. So the Ohio contingent of my wife's family, we all went south and celebrated Christmas in Nashville. And so I'm from a really small family, and growing up, we never like traveled to be with family for the holidays because real small family, everybody was around here. But what I've come to see since being in my wife's family are things that I have seen in movies but never experienced, and that when you go to your family's house somewhere else for a holiday, there's always like the to-do list, right? There's the things that we have to do to check off the list to make sure that we have celebrated the holiday appropriately, right? So there's this list that was created by those that lived in Nashville, that knew Nashville, and all the things that that are cool to do down there. And one of the things on the list was that at some point we had to drive through this one particular neighborhood and see the Christmas light display on this one particular house. Okay, it was on the list. Okay, so there was one night we were driving back from some place and had some time between where we were driving home and then where kids needed to go to bed, and we decided, all right, this is the night to go see the house, right? So we pull into this neighborhood and we're going up the hill. Couldn't see the house yet. We're going up this hill, and over the hill and down the hill is where this house was. Right? As we're going up the hill, we could kind of tell where the house was, because even without having a direct line of sight to the house, it was like you could see the glow, right? It was like even in Nashville, you could see the aurora borealis just emanating up into the heavens, right? You could just kind of, okay, we knew we were close, right? So then we crested the hill, and then we got line of sight on the house, right? And it just radiated light, right? I don't know how many lights were on this thing, but thousands and thousands of lights. And we pull closer, and of course, there's all kinds of cars there that are around this thing. So we waited for somebody to pull out, and we pulled in right across the street from it. And, you know, kids are just gasping and gawking and wowing, and there's just so much going on, right? From the house to the yard to the, like, everything was decked out in lights, right? The little merry-go-round with Santa and Christmas figures, like all teeter-totters, all kinds of things going on there, right? Just an assault of light upon your senses. And then there was one thing that we noticed in the front yard was a sign, and the sign said, tune into, and then it gave a radio station. Like, what? So we thought, well, okay, so let's try it. So we turned on our radio to this radio station, and then, like, as we thought these people couldn't take their light display any higher, when we turned to this radio station, what we realized was is that somewhere in their house, they were a functioning radio station in their house, broadcasting this like playlist of songs into all the cars that were driving by, and the songs that you would listen to in your car correlated to the laser light show that you were seeing in their yard, right? So like as the drums are like the trees going like, and all of the music was coordinated with this incredible show. And if I were to describe to you just in a couple words what that light show was, just a couple adjectives, I would say that that light show was big and it was bold and it was flashy, right? And for me, 3.5 minutes of that, and I was like, man, I've gotten my big, bold, and flashy, I'm ready to go, but I don't make the decisions all the time in my family, and my kids wanted to stay, so we stayed for about 20 minutes, right? A little bit longer than I would have liked, but man, it was 20 minutes of big, bold, and flashy, from the music to the lights to the movement to the literal, like, laser beams going around. It was crazy. But think about it. On the family to-do list, that house was on there, right? There were so many other houses that weren't on the list, right? That was the only house. But the house that we were told that we needed to go see before we went back to Ohio, there wasn't a house on there that said, hey, you need to drive over to this street, this address, because there's a house that's got candles in the window, right? That house didn't make the list. Right? Neither did, there wasn't the house on there where they said, hey, there's this cool house next neighborhood over where they've got a couple strands of light in the front bush, right? That one didn't make the list. Which one made the list? Well, it was the big, bold, flashy, broadcasting their own radio station house. That's the one that made the list. And why is it? Well, I think because there's something inside of us that loves big, bold, and flashy. Particularly, we like that at Christmas time, I think. I think that's why that house made it. Because at Christmas time, we like our light displays to be big and bold and flashy, right? When it comes to the Christmas trees that we're going to put in our house, we want them to be big, or as big as they can be. We want to be big and bold and flashy, right? And the presents that we give, we would like them to be big and bold and flashy. And the presents that we receive, we would really like them to be big, bold, and flashy. There's something about Christmas that we just like it that way, because there's something in our hearts that are drawn to that, which is incredibly ironic, because the first Christmas that all of these other Christmases that we walk through are celebrating was anything but big, bold, and flashy. Anything but. The first Christmas, if we were to describe that with some adjectives, maybe we could say that the first Christmas was actually small, it was humble, and it was subdued. Right? So God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, is at the appropriate point in human history making his grandest assault on planet earth to reclaim it and redeem it and human beings contained within it. God is making his dramatic move, right? And of all times in the history of planet earth, you would think that if God's going to make the most climactic move to reclaim planet earth, you would maybe have the sense that that's going to be big and bold and flashy. But it was not that, right? God's most dramatic move up to that point, it was small, it was humble, and it was subtle. So here's the, you know the story, Mary and Joseph, right? They get word that they've got to be displaced for a small season of time from their home of Nazareth because the emperor of Rome wants to get a count. He wants to know how great he is and how vast his empire is, and he just wants to have everybody counted, which is what kings do when they want to see how great they are. So Caesar makes this proclamation. Everybody in the Roman Empire has got to go to their ancestral home, and then they're just going to start taking numbers, right? So everybody moves wherever they are and goes to wherever they're from, and that's happening on a massive scale. But the difference between everybody else and Mary and Joseph is that Mary is a long way pregnant, right? She is super pregnant. So imagine moving from very far in the south of Israel to a region more towards the north. They've got to make quite a journey with Mary, who is extremely pregnant, right? No Uber, no train, no plane rides to get there. Like, they're going on foot. And so it would take Mary and Joseph just a bit longer to get there than everybody else. So when Mary and Joseph finally end up in Bethlehem, they get there, but because everybody else got there first, right, every other place is taken. There's no place for them to be. So they find the only place that's left for them to stay, which happens to be, we'll call it barn-like accommodations, right? Nothing big, bold, and flashy about Mary and Joseph moving on into the stable for a few days or a couple weeks, depending how long the process would have taken. But they move into the barn-like stable accommodations, right? That is small, that is humble, and that is subtle. And as they set up camp, right, it's not just an abandoned stable, it's a functioning stable. So there's animals all around them, there's feed, there's all the things associated with a stable just happening all around them. Now, for many of us, we were born in the city or the suburbs, and for us, like, the manger scene has twinges of incredibly deep romance to it, right? There's some, because we, for us, it's like we're in the car and we're driving by the cool manger scene that the church is putting on the corner, and there's this, like, oh, that's Christmassy, and there's this romance associated with it. I can assure you that for Mary and Joseph, when they moved into the stable, it was anything but romantic, right? No romance going on here. If you want to experience it yourself, we could arrange for you to spend a night in a stable, and then we'll just all have all those romantic notions just kind of flooded from our minds. Small, humble, and subtle as they set up camp in this stable. And again, so God is moving in dramatic fashion to reclaim planet Earth. But consider this, that the nearest human being on planet Earth to Mary and Joseph, right, just the neighbor that's just down the street, right around the corner, that neighbor would have had absolutely no idea what was happening. No clue, right? Because it wasn't big and it wasn't bold and it wasn't flashy. The neighbor wasn't looking out in the neighborhood. They didn't see the northern lights happening above the place where Jesus was being born. It was a quiet event, and the people around Jesus had no clue what was happening. And you ask the question, you say, this is God on the move? Small, subtle, humble, in a stable, the birth of a baby, this is the climax, God, of what you are doing on planet Earth in redemptive history, this is it? And God says, yep, sure is. And then think about this. From the time that Jesus is born, right, we get a little bit of detailed activity of him in his birth, actually just in two of the Gospels. In Matthew and in Luke, we get the actual account of Jesus' birth, but Mark doesn't even address it, right? Mark gets right into the action with John the Baptist, and John the Apostle begins by saying that he came, and he does it in theological, philosophical language, right? Only two of the Gospels actually dig into the story of it. But after the story of Jesus' birth, then all of the Gospels are silent from the time he is a toddler through the time when he begins his public ministry, right? Nobody even wants to talk about that, save one event where Jesus is a young man, a young boy, and he's actually lingering in the temple in Jerusalem after a festival because he wants to hang out and just continue, he wants to talk to the religious leaders of the day about God, right? But aside from that, we have no information about Jesus' life past his birth from before to the time he starts his ministry, right? Why is that? Well, maybe because there's nothing worth reporting, right? And if you're a parent, you know that when your child is born, like, everybody's there, everybody's congratulating you, and everybody's pumped, you get presents, but after that, everybody kind of disappears, right? Nobody cares, because then you enter the long haul of just raising a human being, and it's a long haul, right? There's nothing big, bold, and flashy about raising a child. It's small, it's humble, and it's subdued, right? You parents, you know this. Right now, I've got a two-year-old who, he's a late-night snacker, let's just say that. He's the kind of guy that when he goes to bed, a couple hours later, he wants to wake up and he wants to eat. And then he goes back to bed. A couple hours later, he wants to wake up and he wants to eat, right? I think he got that from his dad. He's a late night snacker. And that's a problem when you're a parent trying to get sleep. So now I have been moved into the role of late night snacking coach for my son. Because when he sees my wife, that's where he gets his snacks. So anyway, I'm the guy who has to hang out with him through the night to help get him off of this pattern of snacking. So here's what I do, right? And there's nothing big, bold, and flashy about this. No news reporters are coming to my house saying, "Hey, Brian, how'd it go last night with your kid?" Nobody cares about that, right? But so now I wake up probably 6 or 7 times a night, and sometimes I say, "Hey, buddy, let's go back to sleep," and he goes back to sleep. And sometimes I gotta rub his back a little bit, and he goes back to sleep. And then sometimes I have to tell him the story of the three little pigs to get him to chill out and to go back to sleep. And by the time the big bad wolf is coming down the chimney, that's about the time that he goes out. But I have to finish the story just to make sure he went to sleep, right? So, but in you parents, you know that through the years of raising a child, there is nothing about that is big or bold or flashy. The entire process is small, it is humble, and it is subdued, and it is day in, and it is day out. And this is how God is moving to rescue planet Earth. God says, absolutely, yes, this is how I am working, right? And my guess is every single person who was alive in Jesus' day, who heard rumors that God was on the move, they had an expectation of what they thought that would look like or what they assumed that God would be doing in and around those events. And by and large, most people missed it as it was happening because they were looking for the wrong thing. Which is why John says this in John 1 regarding Jesus. John 1, verse 10. John says, "He, Jesus, was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him." We've got to adjust our expectations on what we believe God is all about and what he wants to do, lest we, like most other people around him, absolutely miss him. If we make a plan after church today, and we say, "Hey, this Wednesday, let's do breakfast," and somehow in our communication our wires get crossed, I think we're meeting at 7:30, you think we're meeting at 9, right? Come the morning of breakfast, we're gonna have a little bit of an issue on our hands in that I'm gonna show up at 7:30, and you're not gonna be there, and I'm probably gonna leave about 20 minutes, 25 minutes later. That's about the time that I know it's time to go, and I'm gonna think you just stood me up, and then you're gonna show up at 9 o'clock, and you're probably gonna wait there for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and you're gonna take off, and you're gonna think, "Man, Brian just totally blew me off," right? When we don't have our expectations aligned, what we do is we miss each other. And so often, God is faithful to move, right? He is moving in dramatic fashion, not big, bold, and flashy dramatic fashion, but God is moving, and we're expecting him somewhere else other than where he is, right? But he is happy to move in the small, in the humble, and in the subtle. We see the same thing in 1 Kings chapter 19. Right? I just love this story. This is the prophet Elijah. And Elijah's just kind of struggling. Don't want to go into the context a ton here, but he needs to hear from God. He needs God to show up and just speak some comfort, to speak his presence over him because things are getting really hard for him. And 1 Kings 19, verse 11, here's what we see. "And he said, 'Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord.'" This is the voice of the Lord speaking to him, right? He gets the sense he needs to go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, right? "And behold, the Lord passed by." Awesome, right? Elijah's going to get what he needs. It's just a little touch of God's presence here. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, right? That is big, and that is bold, and that is flashy. And that's what I want. I want God to move like that, right? That's what we want God to be like in our lives. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. Get that big, bold, and flashy demonstration. God says, I'm not in that, Elijah. And after the wind, then an earthquake came. Earth shaking all around Elijah, right? That's big, bold, and flashy. That's something. I'll take that. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. Verse 12. And after the earthquake, there was a fire. That's awesome. I'll take a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. Three big, bold, and flashy signs. Elijah needing a sense of God's presence to show up. And at each of these signs, God says, Elijah, I'm not in any of those. And after the fire, the sound came of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him. That word, small voice, literally means a voice of still thinness. God says, I'm not in the rocks in the mountains getting broken into pieces. I'm not in the earthquake, and I'm not in the fire, Elijah. I am in the voice of thin stillness. And Elijah gets a powerful lesson that will help everyone get ready for how God is going to choose to move in dramatic fashion in the coming years. Small, humble, and subtle. Right, and all of this means that if we're going to follow Jesus, if we're going to walk with him, and if we're going to know him and be his and be founded in him, then what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to greatly adjust our expectations on who God is, what he wants to give us, and how he wants to give it. Right? God is eager to move among us and in us. He is more eager to move among us than we are eager to have him move among us. He is pumped. He is on the edge of his seat, just yearning to do good and to shower blessing and all of these things that we long for. He is eager to do that. And he loves to do good in us and among us. But if we don't have eyes to see it, and a heart to perceive what he's doing, then we miss it. Behold, he who made the world stepped into the world, and the world did not receive him. Weren't ready for him, weren't looking for him, weren't cultivating the right eyes to see exactly what he was doing and what he was about. Christmas is one of those times when we're constantly reminded that we have to adjust our expectations about what he's doing and how he's doing it. Because if we don't, we're going to miss everything that he is doing. Right? Here's just a confession. Right? I'll confess on behalf of you because you're just like me. Right? I can confess freely up here because I know that you're all exactly like me. I'm not the only odd one out. But if you ask me on a normal day, Brian, do you want to see God move? I say, yeah. How do you want to see him move? I would probably describe something to you on the level of big, bold, and flashy. Right? That would just be the thing that would immediately come out of me naturally. And it may be kind of like this. I would want God, as I'm walking through my day, I would want him to just show up and do something on the size and the scale of a fully mature redwood tree, right? Anybody, you guys seen the redwoods? Sequoia forest, redwood forest, anybody seen those, right? Never seen them, but I've heard about them and I've seen pictures of them. I, metaphorically speaking, I would love God to just show up and just interrupt me and drop something that big and that dramatic right in front of me. And I would say, God, I know that's you. Awesome. Thank you for doing this big, bold, and flashy thing, right? That's what I want, right? That would be an incredible sign to me that God was moving. It would be hard to deny that that would be his hand and his activity doing something extraordinary around me, and my heart longs for that, and I want that. But then I have to be reminded that here's how God often drops things of the size of a fully mature redwood among us, right? Here's the process through which God goes about doing that. And he's been doing this for eons of time. He is quite content to see the seed of a redwood tree dropped on the ground. A little bit of ruffling happens on the soil, it gets covered up. The seed at the appropriate time slowly germinates, right? If you're a deer walking by, you wouldn't notice it. Similar to Jesus being born in the manger, right? Nobody around has any idea what's happening in the ground, but something just sprouted, right? And then slowly the thing starts to grow. And then 500 to 750 years later, there's the big, bold, and flashy tree. Wow. That's awesome, right? God has just been demonstrating from the beginning of time that he's all about doing big things. And he loves to do it in small, humble, and subtle ways. And he is more patient than we are. And he's doing things like that all around us. But because we're looking for the fully formed tree to drop out of the sky immediately, we miss all the small, miraculous things that he is doing, the ways he's longing to bless us right now, right now, right now. In Christmas, man, he just drops this seed onto planet Earth. And the seed is actually a person who's not just a person, but he's God, fully God, man, fully man. And this Christ child, the Messiah, the King, is dropped like a seed into planet Earth. And then very slowly, he just starts to grow, right? And he grows for a period of time that nobody even cares to document it because there's nothing flashy going on there. But this child who was born into small and humble and subtle circumstances then begins his ministry and works his way forward. And this thing that God is doing that is big, that is meant to bless everybody, starts moving and starts growing and starts expanding and then starts turning into something. And God to this day continues to move through his Son in us and among us in that fashion. So this Christmas, we've been saying this for several weeks now. I don't want to miss Christmas. I don't want to miss what God is doing. But we've got to have eyes to see, a heart to perceive how he's moving around us. He is. He absolutely is. We just need to have our expectations adjusted so that we don't miss it. One more confession. I've got some time, and I'm among friends. I like to learn from a wide variety of people. I like to learn from the person who chooses to live in hermit-like circumstances, right? Maybe they come from generational wealth, and they say, I'm going to forsake that. I'm going to go live among the poor in wherever. I love learning from those kinds of people. I also love learning from people that have built billion-dollar corporations, right? Because there's so many different things to learn from everybody. And so this week, I was on YouTube learning from just some guys who are about my age, who for whatever reason have grown multi-million dollar businesses, and just listening to them spit out wisdom and taking the good and getting rid of the bad, right? That's because we all need to have discernment, but just listening to some of these guys. And then here's what I began to see as I just continued to listen to some of these guys. I began to think, I'm about their age. And these guys have built something with their life that is big and bold and flashy. What have I done? Right? And that I just start to compare, like, man, these guys are doing a lot. Man, these guys are getting it done. These guys are building significant things. I'm like, I haven't done anything like that, right? And then I notice, right? And sometimes I don't know how, maybe my personality is more wired to this. I can kind of sense when I'm going off course. And some people are more able to sense that than others. I don't think it's a spiritual maturity thing. Sometimes it is, but more so it's just how we're made. But I feel like I could just tell that my heart was moving in this trajectory of, shoot, I need to do something like that. I need to do something big and bold and flashy because I want my life to mean something. I want to have a life of significance. And I just found myself moving down that, and like my peace just started to like flood away from me, right? And I started to get like just a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of restlessness. And I was getting short with people in my house, like, you know, just annoyed with the kids, right? The late night snacker. I start to get annoyed with everything. I'm like, there's something, like, what's going on inside of me, right? And I just got to pause. We talked about this last week. I'm like, God, shepherd my heart back to Jesus. Help me here because I'm off and I need you to bring me back to the good place, which is where Jesus is. And I just start to realize, man, yeah, everything that I'm talking about right now, right? God started to work me through it. Right? And it's great that those guys are doing what they're doing, right? They're doing what God, some of them are doing what God made them to do. Some of them aren't. But that's their life, and they're going to give an account to God someday for what they're doing. But what I need to do is to be faithful with what God has called me to do, right? And maybe they're doing big, bold, and flashy, and maybe my life isn't. My life is more small, it's humble, and it's subtle. I'm the guy that's up six times every night trying to get my kid to go to sleep so we can work through his late night snacking issues. Like that's the world that I live in. And you know what? Something happened inside of me as I allowed God to speak in to my yearning for big, bold, and flashy, but to meet me in the realization that that's not me. He's got me small, humble, and subtle. And the coolest thing happened in that, like, this sense of peace and contentment and joy just like started to wash over me. Right? And it's just like, God, thank you. Thank you. Right? Big, bold, and flashy can happen, but it's not necessarily God doing anything there. In small, humble, and subtle, well, sometimes things can just be small, humble, and subtle, but sometimes God is doing dramatic things in the small, humble, and subtle. And I just said, God, thank you. Right? Thank you for where you have me, for what you're doing in me, for the small, humble, subtle things that you may be doing through me, right? Thank you for that. And it was just like the light flip just like, boop, just went on, right? And where I was cranky and anxious and just discontent and like yearning to do something bigger with my life that I didn't know what to do. And finally, God works me into this place and I'm like, yes, thank you, Jesus. Thank you. I'm right, and I can live the rest of my days very, very deeply contented and thankful and at just full measure of peace, living in the small and the humble and the subtle, if I allow the presence of the small, humble, and subtle working, living God to be right there with me. And that is just a beautiful place for us to be, right? And Christmas is just that time when hopefully God brings us back to this all year long. But man, at Christmas time, right, we just see this thing that God is doing in dramatic, dramatic fashion, but so small, so humble, so subtle. We see the manger scene unfolding. Man, I just need to be reminded that's how God moves. And that's where he wants to meet us. And that's where he wants to fill us. And that's where he wants to overwhelm us with joy, not with the redwood coming down out of heaven and everybody seeing it and saying, hey, wow, God's moving over there. Well, I want to be content with the seed going into the ground, right? And nobody sees it, and that seed's sprouting. Nobody cares. The seed grows. For 400 years, nobody gives a rip about it, right? And I just want to be content with that. Because that's where God moves. And that's where God says, that's where I want you to join me. And he says, Merry Christmas. Receive the gift and join me. Let's pray. Father in heaven, please adjust our expectations of you, lest we miss you. God, the great tragedy of our lives won't be that we never built a billion-dollar business, or that we were elected to the Senate. God, the greatest disappointment won't be that none of those things happened necessarily, unless those are things you want us to do, then it would be a disappointment. But God, the greatest disappointment for us would be that we would miss you in searching and yearning and striving for those things. So Father, I just ask that you would protect me and protect all of us from that. And Father, those among our body who are not here, God, we just want to pray that protection over them as they're in their beds this morning or up drinking their coffee, waiting the services tonight. God, I pray that you would protect us from yearning and longing for the big, bold, and flashy as we miss you. But Father, lead us into an experience with you that is small and humble and subtle. And in that, would you flood our hearts with peace, with your presence, with joy, with satisfaction that can't be taken away. God, that's our hope. And we can't do it on our own. So God, we give your Spirit freedom and permission. It's so odd that we would be in a place to give you permission. But Father, we give you permission to work this into us so that we can follow you more closely. Thanks for loving us. Thanks for planting Jesus here so that we might be rescued. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.